Okay. So yesterday we mentioned the first point of the Baruch Shamar on Matovu, where he asked the question of why it is that we start when we walk into shul specifically with words from someone who hated Bnei Yisrael. And his suggestion had been that in general people tend to speak well about those that they care about, that they love, and badly about those that they hate. Ahava mekalkelet ad ashura. And therefore, the most accurate statement you're going to get is from begrudging admission of your enemies that the Jews are wonderful, their shuls are wonderful, and that's why he thought that we started specifically with these psukim. I want to cover two other points that he makes. In addition to that, he notes that besides the fact that, yes, it's true that Bilaam particularly hated the Jewish people, and therefore what he says about the Jews in a positive light has particular weight, he does note that this also, on the flip side, is part of a pattern which the Rambam definitely celebrated, which was that in general, in the Torah, we believe that Kabbalah et ha'emet mimisha amarah, that in addition to that fact, in the end of the day, as much as we might not want to accept truth from certain people, we have a belief in truth, and therefore we believe that we can get truth from whoever we judge things on their own merit, and not necessarily who they come from. So in addition to the fact that maybe this was the most true, even if it wasn't, the fact is that our commitment to truth is such that it doesn't really matter who says it. And he notes that even just these few psukim of Matovu, it's not just that it's what we say, the psukim we say when we come into shul, but we derive many halachot from it. So just from this particular paragraph, you get that point. And he notes that in brachot, we learn issues of haganat Torah, protecting the Torah. We learn certain formulations of brachot from it. Elsewhere, I'll just skip around here, in Bava Batra, this is one of the sources for the issues of hezek ri'iyah, of visual damage, of privacy concerns that we have in halacha. And he goes through, he has 10 examples of different halacha we learn just from this in Bilaam. And he notes this is true in other cases as well. Just to take some of his examples from this week's Parsha, a traditional bracha that Jews give at a wedding is taken from the bracha that Betuel and Lavan, right, the family of Rivka, give to Rivka when she's being sent away and getting married. Right, what do they say? Who remembers the parsha? No, it's an interesting parsha. Achotenu atayi l'alfei rivava. At a wedding, right, we say, our sister, may you become thousands and tens of thousands, or thousands of tens of thousands, or whatever you want to. How do you want to render it? Probably thousands and tens of thousands. Right, and we get that straight from this week's parsha. It gives a whole bunch of examples. So right, you have this balance. On the one hand, yes, our enemy saying something might be the best way of deriving that this positive attribute of the Jews and their shuls is actually true. But on the other hand, it is part of a pattern where we take the truth from wherever it comes. Even if the source is not exactly glut, as we would say. And he gives other examples, right, the fact that we actually learn from Lavan, even though it's his deception, but we do learn from Lavan, at least in one version, in Chazal, that Eimar and Besimcha Besimcha, that we don't mix weddings, right? Even though, obviously, the reason that they had to have both weddings of Rachel and Leah is because Lavan had tricked Yaakov. Still, the fact that he said the minhag here is not to have... Right. The fact that he says, let's wait a week, right? Let's wait a week until we have the second wedding, right? That does become one of the sources for Ein Marvin Simcha B'Simcha. He has a very long analysis of this. He notes that we obviously have explicit statements like this in Chazal, such as Ezu Chacham Halomeid Mikol Adam. And he actually thinks that this is equivalent to the parallel, which is Ezu Chacham, right, who is wise, not just Halomin Mikol Adam, someone who learns from everybody, but Haro'ed HaNolad. Now, normally, Haro'ed HaNolad is translated as he who sees what is coming, right, that which is going to be born. But he argues that since in Avot Derevi Natan, this line, Haro'ed HaNolad is actually paralleled to the version in Mishnah and Avot of Halomei Mikol Adam, that you can also understand how Ro'ed HaNolad, that someone is wise if he looks at something simply, right, the way it was born. Meaning we don't look at who birthed it, but we look at that which was born, meaning the words that they say. So that's the second sort of yisod that he derives from Matovah, though at the end he notes that the one exception to this does seem to be people who aren't just bad, but are specifically heretical, which as bad as Bilam was, he's someone who spoke to God, and therefore it's unlikely that he denied God, and does note that the one time that Chazal are more hesitant is in that case, which is why in the Gemara has to justify why Rabbi Meir could be a student of Acher, of Elisha ben Avuya, who was the apostate Tana. Okay, so that's the first section of the Baruch Shamar here, right, where he focuses on what we learn from quoting Bilam, either the fact that we specifically want to quote someone who hates the Jews when he praises them, because that has particular force, or simply this is part of a greater commitment to taking the truth from wherever it comes with all of his other examples. His second point, though, his second section moves on, and he says, okay, nevertheless, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin that all the things that, all the brachot of Bilam at some point got reversed because we didn't want to believe, we don't want people to believe that somehow Bilam had certain powers, and the reason that these blessings came true was because Bilam said that. The Gemara goes through that on Sanhedrin Kukhei. However, the one exception to that is this bracha, is that the brachot that remained on Matovu O'Olecha Yaakov, on the shuls, continued, right? That one wasn't reversed. So he says, why not? And here, and you might have touched on seen some of these Gemara already in the Kiyut, right? The Gemara on Davav in brachot says, because Ein Tfilato Adam Nishma'at Ela Beveda Knesset, Shnemar L'shmoa El Harina Ve'la Tfila. Because the power of a shul, the power of a Beit Knesset, cannot be easily disregarded. It's not something we want to reverse. And as the Gemara says, people's tefillot are not heard except in shul, because it's a makom of rina, right, where people praise God, that's where you should daven. As Rashi puts it, Beit Knesset Shisham Omrim Atzibor Shirot V'Tishbachot, in shul where the community says praises to God, Benimat Kol Arev, with a beautiful voice, that's where you should daven. And therefore he says, right, the other reason we quote it is because specifically, right, it's not just what he said, but the very local point, which is that there's something unique about shul, about the place where everyone davens, and that is critical to understanding. The davening doesn't just work by itself, but context matters, and specifically be davening in a place which is designated for tefillah and other people are davening, that idea is so central, and therefore of all the ideas we could have quoted from Bilam, that's the one that has the most staying power and therefore is not reversed, and the one that we specifically want to quote, obviously, as we enter a shul and begin for davening. Okay, it is 55, so let's...